We were never born to read.
Isn't that a fantastic first line?
It is.
And indeed, it's a line that actually has many an insight for neuroscientists. There's not a gene, there's not a region in our brain that was specifically for reading. So what reading teaches us is how the brain learns something new. Now, from my work, what we have been doing over the last 20 years is understanding how human beings build a reading circuit in the brain that utilizes regions that were already there, and how the brain actually repurposes neurons meant, let's say, for visual processing, and uses them to build representations of letters, letter patterns, words, etc. Now, what all of that teaches us, and this is a very important message for teachers, is that how we've been thinking about the teaching of reading has been, unfortunately, bifurcated into a binary, unnecessary debate about methods. There are those who are wonderfully idealistic and believe that children should be creative and play and induce the rules of reading. That would be the more whole language advocates. And there are those who are believing that the phonics, the original basic elements, need to be taught. The reality of the reading brain circuit and the evidence certainly supports those who've been working on the phonics structure and giving that first to children. There's no question that the developmental sequence of the circuit is most benefited by this emphasis on the foundations, learning what phonemes, the sounds, learning how letters work with sounds, learning how to decode the language. That is not, however, excluding the beauty of the emphases on words and text and literature. And for me, the debate has been so terribly destructive and unnecessary because people seem to be so loyal to past methods of how they were taught.
I was going to say, am I loyal to a certain approach because it is the way I was taught?
That has happened, and these are some of the most idealistic members of our society. Who else works for so little to teach the next generation? But they are only using half of our existing knowledge about how the circuit should best to be developed.
Now, I'm interested in that because I know that when we talk about, let's say, kids who are disadvantaged,
yes,
who are struggling,
yes,
to read, you believe that there is a significant word gap.
Yes.
What is that word gap?
What we know from literature on this topic is really unfortunate, that children who are coming from impoverished language homes have about 30 to 32 million words less heard and therefore less represented in their brain. Vocabulary is one of the most important things we can emphasize from 0 to 5 and five on. Mm. But when the child comes to kindergarten with a dearth of language, they can't hook the meaning of a word to what they're decoding. And this is a wonderful example from you, because when I'm talking about what is best for the reading circuit, we're not talking about a binary, old-fashioned debate. Mm. We are talking about how the brain learns. And the more that we see the letters, the more we hear the sounds, the more we know the meanings, all of that builds representations in the brain that then we connect in the teaching of reading. But those who exclude the bottom rungs of the ladder and expect our underprivileged children to simply jump to the top layers, they unfortunately are making the most egregious error of 20th century education.
So, and this is a very big subject
area.
Very
big, yes.
What is your advice? What will you, yes, be telling at this conference about? Is it about opening your eyes to broader possibility than that which we already do? Mm. Or are there just some ways that you would say to teachers, there are better ways of teaching kids to read?
Yes.
To parents, there are better ways,
yes,
of empowering kids through language. What would you be telling them?
I'm going to be very difficult and terse.
Mm.
We need better methods. We need to get rid of the dirty secret of teaching of reading in Australia, in which teachers who are in grade 5 are suddenly put in responsibility for kindergarten. They have never learned how to teach reading. So there are things administratively that are happening. Okay. There are things about teachers who are advocating methods of the past. Whole language is a wonderful thing, but it's only half. They are ignoring, even in those who say they are doing balanced reading, they are really ignoring the sequence we need for children to have. It doesn't exclude language. It, in fact, includes all of language. So we need better methods. We need better professional development. And third, very important, we need to understand that dyslexia exists. When I'm in Sydney and parts of Victoria, I am told it doesn't exist in terms of how teachers can teach, how principals can give money to assessment and intervention.
Just explain what you mean by that, that you're told
they
that
say
it doesn't
literally
exist.
That this is not something that is accepted as an entity. I would give
so all
anyone,
those kids in that classroom who are in this absolute word jumble of conclusion.
Exactly. They have no chance of making what is really, especially those of us who just study the dyslexic brain, this is an extraordinarily creative brain, and they will not be allowed. It is an individual waste, and it's an economic waste for Australia not to recognize dyslexia.
My guest this morning is Professor Marianne Wolfe. You're only listening to her. I'm seeing her, and I can tell you that I would expect her to be exploding out of the radios. Such is her passion, but also your gesture and involvement is just huge with this. You have a son with dyslexia?
I certainly do.
So how do we better understand what dyslexia is? And you talk about the creative talents, but how do we embrace the difficulty that one person has in such a way that we... Mm-hmm. If I have dyslexia, can you teach me to read and understand those words?
Of course I can. And that's really the problem. Yeah. Many people don't realize that dyslexia is simply a different organization of the brain that was here 50,000 years ago for a reason. That brain is one of our most extraordinary architect, artist, surgeon, radiologist. But we can teach that brain when we have early diagnosis and then targeted intervention. We now know from our research in Boston the profiles of dyslexia as early as kindergarten. We take that information and we have trained teachers, and we can not just ameliorate some forms, but we can save the potential for children who otherwise have no idea what's wrong. Mm. They think they are a failure. Mm. They think there's something wrong with them. Mm. There's something wrong with our teaching, not with the child. And with the proper assessment and intervention, we can do so much. But what we can't do is have teachers who ignore dyslexia or give old-fashioned methods that don't give them the bottom rungs. And so my message to everyone is professional development has to be recharged, rethought with this new information about the reading brain.
It's 17 minutes after 9. Professor Marianne Wolfe is the director of the Center for Reading and Language Research at Tufts University in Boston, and she is in Perth to speak at a conference organized by Learning Difficulties Australia. Professor, it said that sort of almost one in three, up to 30%, almost one in three of Australians could be functionally illiterate. Mm-hmm. Does that mean they can't read and write?
It usually means that they are not at the potential they should have, and often it's that third grade. We have to teach our children to become fluent by the end of third grade, so what that figure is representing doesn't happen. We can do it. But part of what you were saying is that our methods often are ignoring or neglecting some of the needs of that one-third.
Do we neglect that student after third grade anyway?
Oh, my gosh. You know, you're just pushing all my cerebral buttons here, Jeff. But yes, and in fact, one of the real horrors is that, and I call this the black hole of American education, from fourth grade on, teachers are not taught to read or to recognize. And so from fourth grade on, it's like they disappear, they vanish, and along with them vanishing is the potential of our citizenry to contribute. That's an enormous number of wonderful people who otherwise could contribute. So we need professional development well beyond what you would call, I think, level three, I would call third grade. From fourth grade to eighth grade, we need to have our teachers more involved in knowing what they could do.
It's not hard to press your cerebral buttons. A couple of things. You know, I use a statistic like up to 30% of Australians could be functionally illiterate. Mm-hmm. Is that a trend? Is that indicative of many places?
You know, I think Australia is having more issues than other places. I don't want to ignore the fact that there are also trends that our reading is changing. And so an entirely other topic that I'm also working on is the impact, the cognitive impact of digital culture on reading. There's no question that our children's attention and memory is changing when they are reading too long, too much, too early on digital screens.
Okay.
So we need to also...
Let's listen to this bit. Okay, significance of the digital screen.
The digital screen changes how we read. Even the first statement you made, we were never born to read. That means our reading brain circuit is very plastic. It's influenced by the writing system, by how it's instructed, and also by the medium in which it reads. So it's a really important thing for us to realize that technology is something wonderful or pernicious, and it's the use of technology that can be very helpful, or in fact, when not vigilantly looked at, can actually be a destructive force on literacy. It can lead to insufficient attention to consolidating knowledge, always over-relying on external platforms of knowledge, and also not going and giving enough time in that circuit to learn to be expert, deep readers.
That is a fantastic phrase, the consolidation of knowledge. Yes. Not just reading stuff, but knowing stuff.
Knowing. It's extremely important, and it's a great worry among the young that they will become over-reliant on external platforms that are adjudicated often by corporate motivation or popularity, neither of which the sum of is knowledge.
Professor Marianne Wolfe, what a pleasure to have you in the studio. Thank you very much. She just rolled her eyes. Really interesting. Thank you so much for coming in.